Hi, I'm Chris Basden, and you're listening to part three of our three-part JFA podcast with independent recruiter Beth Burke. If you missed parts one and two, check out our archive podcasts on Podomatic.
So the last thing that I'd like to cover is probably one of the trickiest that you're going to have to deal with as a job applicant, and that's when it looks like they're going to offer you a job, or they do offer you a job, and you start negotiating for salary and benefits. What are some of the mistakes that you see people make whenever it comes to that critical stage of the job application and interview process?
Well, I think similar to some of the other advice I've been giving, I think you have to look at it from the other person's perspective also. But some of the things that I've seen that I think are just to make the negotiating process go well is, number one is either not being flexible in some of the you're asking. So it could be related to salary. It could be related to time off. It could be related to the ability to work from home. But show some flexibility. And if you're not flexible, that's okay too. However, realize that you may not get the job because of that, and it may interfere with being able to make, you know, the kind of move you'd like to make. Because if I think an employer, if they see that you're not being flexible, may realize that you may behave that way on the job as well. And therefore, you hope that they even go through with giving you a job offer. Or, you know, sometimes it might be reneged because you're asking for things that are just that are not realistic. Again, it could be dealing with salary, time off, hours, working from home, et cetera. Another area where I think when you're negotiating for a job is, again, if this is the way you are, I'm always big on being who you are. However, you don't want to appear as being difficult or demanding or high maintenance. Because what may happen is you may have gotten a job offer, maybe the demand for your type of requirements and skills and performance. However, you might not get off to the right mindset when being hired. They may hire you anyway. However, you know, you might have left a sour taste in somebody's mouth, so to speak, and it could impact your ability to move ahead in the years to come. And they may hire you because the work needs to be done, but they may not view you for a more senior or leadership role because of some of these behavioral characteristics. You also don't want to make it seem that it's all about you. And that's, again, sort of going back to not being flexible and realizing that you'll be working with other people and you're not running the company, and the company may not be catering just to your wishes, that they have other people they have to consider in terms of salary ranges. And if they make exceptions for you, they have to make those exceptions for other people. So be aware of that. Now, mind you, a smaller firm or company may have a lot more flexibility to be flexible with you and make it more about you. But again, those things may factor into long-term growth within an organization. Although you may get hired off the bat if you behave these ways, you may not get ahead in the long run. One of the things, too, is for asking for things after you accepted an offer or provided your requirements and looking for a job. For instance, if you are looking to relocate yourself and you get a job offer and then you go back and try to ask for some money towards relocation, you know, you don't know how this is going to be perceived by the hiring professional of the company. You know, maybe they thought you didn't think things through. Again, most likely they probably wouldn't renege the job offer. However, it may impact how you are viewed in the long term for growth opportunities at that company. The other thing, too, is for asking for too much time off with pay shortly after starting. It's okay to say you have vacations planned or whatever it is that you have, you know, planned for time off, whether it's something dealing with your children, your family, et cetera. And you should, I always believe one should offer to take that as unpaid, especially if it's in the first 6 months or so of the job, the first year. And a lot of employers will work with you to make sure you get paid for that or make it up. But to, you know, to be somewhat demanding of asking for that after a short time of starting, I think is not necessarily realistic, and you shouldn't ask for that. Bringing up that you need to make a certain amount of money to cover your expenses, Sort of goes back to what I talked about earlier of somebody asking for a higher salary because now they have to commute. I think you need to take that all into consideration in your asking price. And again, if you're needing to cover your expenses and your asking price is too high, you may not get that job. If you're working with an external recruiter and you're seeking a managerial leadership type role, and then you ask the recruiter to negotiate for you in negotiations, I always advise the more experienced professionals I work with to negotiate for themselves. And it's not to say I'm not there to support them and I'll step in if I need to. However, at the end of the day, especially if you're going to be in a leadership role, you want to show, number one, that you know how to negotiate and that you're fair. And number two is if you don't like the way the negotiations are going with the prospective employer, it's up to you to decide whether you want to accept that job or not, because most likely the way they're negotiating with you today is the way they're going to negotiate with you next year. And if I go in and negotiate for my candidate and they get what they want, I'm not going to be there next year to negotiate for their salary increase or bonuses as well. A few more items I think that are important to pay attention to is similar to some of the other areas I've already brought up, is about not getting back to people or showing some type of passive aggressive behavior. Especially if you're seeking a managerial leadership type role. So if you bother to go through the steps or of trying to negotiate different elements back and forth, whether it be by phone call or by email, and you're supposed to get back to the employer for, say, maybe they needed some information about you in terms of I saw this once, I think, with like healthcare, where they needed to know I think the ages of the family members to figure out what the healthcare costs were going to be based upon what the healthcare was amounts at that time. So if somebody's trying to do something to work with you, maybe healthcare is a bad example, but they're trying to work with you to help you negotiate and get to where you're trying to go, the least you can do is if they're asking for information back is to get back to them on a timely basis. And if you're not able to get back to them when you say you're going to get back to them, again, let them know when you will get back to them. And then the worst is, I think, is going back and forth several times, even getting all the items that you asked for, and then turning around and not accepting the job. That one I've seen happen of late, especially in the CPA firm world, because there's a bit of a shortage. And I've seen a lot of people go back to their current employers and get counter offers, and they end up staying. And I've heard that from a lot of my clients as well.
Very good. Is there anything else that you think that we haven't talked about that you think is important to point out?
I didn't know if you had wanted to talk about mistakes on the resumes.
Yeah. We've talked a little bit about that, about misspellings and things like that. But what are some of the other mistakes that you see on resumes that can really hurt a job
applicant? Okay. Well, one thing that I don't think people realize is many times a resume doesn't reflect the information about the company where they worked, especially in the industry. And it could be the same thing for CPA firms. If a CPA firm is of a certain size, specializes in certain types of industry, et cetera, a lot of times people put down the name of the company. Maybe they put down where it's located. And unless it's a company name that you're aware of, you know, a big, you know, publicly traded company that's, you know, worldwide, a lot of times the receiver of your resume has no idea what that company does. So I think it's really important to indicate and reflect information per each employer, such as what do they do or sell? What is their size in terms of the revenue, if they can disclose or arrange? Number of locations, number of staff, is it global? Also include within each job what software you use. You know, are you part of a division or are you working in the corporate office of a company? I think by not having some of this information, or and also maybe including how many people you supervise and the type of roles, or at least having that somewhere within your the description of your particular jobs, by not having that, you may be overlooked because somebody doesn't know what your company does, and maybe they're not going to take the time to go look up on the internet as to get that information. Another area where I think sometimes it could be problematic is not customizing one's resume for a job, and or not having it reflect enough information. So, for instance, I think if people don't take the time to put their best foot forward on a resume overall, you know, somebody may feel that's reflective of how they may perform in the job. So it goes back to the judgment and things along those lines and how you're being perceived. So you may want to customize a job, especially if you work, say, in a combination of industry and public accounting, you know, put the duties down that are reflective of the job that you're applying for. Or maybe you didn't, maybe there's a particular part of the job you're applying for that you haven't done in a while and you didn't really highlight it on your resume. Or maybe you did do it recently, but you didn't highlight it on your resume. And maybe that's an important part of what somebody's looking for in someone's job experience. So you definitely want to make sure that your resume reflects the type of duties and functions that you're applying for, and it comes across clearly. Another area where I feel that a lot of job seekers make a faux pas, so to speak, on their resume is if it's too many pages or they use one line per duty or per task. So it ends up reading like a full, like a long job description. I mean, I've seen resumes, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pages long, where it could have been condensed into two. You know, if they have a lot of experience, that's fine to have a two-page resume. Or I've also seen on the flip side, somebody's worked maybe, you know, 2 or 3 jobs and could have been fitted on, it could be definitely fit on one page, and it goes over into two, and they make, say, a 3-month job or a 1-month internship look like they're expert on that particular area when that's not the case either. So yeah, I think you have to look at how many years you've been working for and how you can condense some of the bullets to be succinct, but yet state the type of information that's meaningful, including accomplishments, and then quantifying information where possible too. For instance, if you reduced expenses over the course of a year, how much did you reduce it by, either percentage or dollar amount? What did you do? And it could be definitely a three-line description could easily be turned into a one-liner if you really take the time to stop and think about how to write it succinctly. And if you're not very good at writing, you know, seek some help in your resume writing, but make sure the voice is still yours and it's somewhat of your own writing style, because a lot of jobs in today's world do require people to be able to write and communicate. And if somebody completely did your resume and you didn't write it at all, and then you get hired for a job that requires you to do a lot of writing, and it becomes apparent that you're unable to communicate and express, you know, in the written form what needs to be done, you know, you may not have that job for too long, or you may not get promoted, or there may be some limitations there, and somebody may feel that you misrepresented yourself. And you definitely don't want to misrepresent anything about your background either. Some other areas, too, that I feel is education. A lot of folks coming to the U.S. Don't necessarily put down where they went to school. Maybe they don't want to be viewed as having gone to school overseas. You know, I think I'm all about facts. If you went to more than one school, I believe people should put it down. If a company goes and asks for your transcript or background, and a transcript most likely will show that you transferred in from another university, you don't know how an employer is going to feel about that in terms of how you reflected it on your resume. If you require sponsorship, I think it's important to reference that as well on one's resume. So many companies may not sponsor at this time, and you don't want to be called in for an interview only to find out that, you know, they won't be able to sponsor you. Other areas where you might be misrepresenting the truth is if you've worked for, and this is one of my other big areas that I write about a lot, is if you worked for a staffing company directly, but yet you put down the staffing company's client as your employer, that's not really accurate. Whoever's paying your payroll is your employer, and the client you're working for is their client. Stating that you're still in a job when you've left is not a very good thing to do either. I get that a lot, and sometimes people say, well, you know, I just left recently, and recently could have been 2 or 3 weeks ago, and yet they didn't update their resume. So it seems to be deliberate to me if they've left their job and they haven't updated their resume to reflect that. Also indicating that you've done things when you really assisted doing those things. I think it's important to be accurate in your choice of words that you use to describe the duties that you've done, or making it seem like you've worked 10 years. Many people, their answers to a lot of times when I ask, so tell me, is there any work that you've done that is not on your resume? Because I'm all about being transparent, even if it means summarizing, you know, 10, 20 years worth of experience into a line or two on one's resume. A lot of people would tell me, well, the other recruiters told me to only go back 10 years. And, you know, a lot of people are worried about discrimination, especially age discrimination. At the end of the day, I think you have to view it from the standpoint of, you know, if you're showing up for a job and your resume doesn't quite match of the experience that you're portraying yourself to have, you've just somewhat misrepresented your represented yourself, and the hiring manager may or may not believe another word that comes out of your mouth, or they may think, what else are you trying not to tell me? So, yeah, again, you have to look at it from the other person's perspective. Also, if you post your resume somewhere online to some kind of job board database, make sure your resume has contact information on it. It's very possible somebody downloads your resume to be able to call you back a little bit later as they're doing searches, and then come to realize there's no telephone number or email to be able to contact that person. I probably could go on and on and on about the resumes. That's an area where I think there's a lot of room for improvement for a lot of people. And I think that by not taking the time to put your best foot forward, again, it goes back to somebody may view that as, you know, how are you going to perform on the job? And if you're hiring professionals, you would want them to put their best foot forward as well and represent themselves accurately.
Thanks, Beth. That's been some great information. And I'd also like to thank our audience for listening today. If you enjoyed this podcast, check out more JFA podcasts on our website and in the CPA Insider newsletter.